6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the whole press coverage network. I am Chris at Light Voice, joined virtually by Matt Lee at Matt Lee underscore 61, Anna Forsyth at A Forsyth03, and back on the IR, or alternatively, possibly designated for assignment, Adam Ovenel Carter at Adam FOC. So it's just the three of us for this show, which is happening moments before the C4 Fantasy Hockey Draft, I guess. That's what we're calling it.
You nailed it.
It's an exciting time.
I like how Matt's like, yeah, no, totally. We're going to live stream it. Just, yeah, Light Force will take care of that.
He's our tech guy.
You know what?
You did, though.
I am merely giving the people, Chris, what they've asked for. We had people asking for the live stream, and this was my way of saying, Chris, we'll make that happen. Snap the fingers, and Chris is on it. So I need to give my kudos to you for delivering the goods and giving the people what they've wanted.
Well, speaking of giving the people what they wanted, did you guys hear? I'm going to let the cat out of the bag early. Louis Erickson has been designated for assignment.
I know. Miracles do happen. 2021. There's hope. There's optimism.
You know what? I was going to use this last week and then I forgot to use it, but I would just like to say, you guys, that it has been a long, long time coming, but finally it happened and it gave everybody exactly what they're looking for. Cobra Kai Season 3 came out and it delivered big time. Oh, and Louis Erickson got waived.
Yeah. One of them I'm more excited for. I mean, just the optics of it, I think it starts the season on a good foot. Like, Louis Erickson has been a passenger on this team for a long time. A very expensive passenger, so.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit as well, but, like, long time coming. Well, like, Louis Erickson just, yeah.
And by the time everyone's listening to this episode, there might be some clarity on what that actually means. There's no bloody way anyone's going to pick him up. Whether or not he sits upstairs and wherever the taxi squad sits or finds himself on his way to Utica to go ride the bus, who knows? But that has happened. Season starts on Wednesday, which is kind of crazy. We went from not knowing when there would be a season to suddenly knowing when there would be a season and then suddenly being, in front of a season. So we're going to talk a little bit about what that roster will look like, break down the special teams and how everyone gets a chance, apparently. Pod Colson's got some stuff happening to him. All sorts to talk about. So you know what? Let's get on top of the show and dive into Rewind. Before I actually talk about the season starting, how much do we read into the fact that the Vancouver Canucks organizationally decided, you know what, we're not actually going to practice because of reasons? Now, we've since learned it was due to a false positive of someone, receiving a false positive on a COVID test. The follow-up or subsequent test showed that they weren't positive. I completely applaud the Canucks for taking the step of, yeah, we're going to shut things down, play this safe, because I think that's what's most important here. But this is going to be the reality, and with the compressed schedule as it exists, I am going to gather we're going to see a number of games, not necessarily with Vancouver, but just a number of games across the NHL being postponed, and not maybe just one, quite possibly multiple games, which begs the question, are we going to see like the college football experience where I think what the Alabama and Ohio State are currently playing tonight, and one's got like 12 games and the other one got 7 games on the season just because of, again, cancellations, reschedules due to COVID.
Yeah, I think that is the reality until, everyone get vaccinated or we're closer to that. And Gary Bettman's confirmed today that the NHL and its players and staff are getting in line behind everyone else, so they won't get special treatment. I do think it's the reality, but I think the one benefit of having these tight divisions is that, yes, it may like slightly mess up your schedule, but it will be easier to figure out where you can find replays. I mean, you're playing teams twice in a row, at least maybe three times, so it should be slightly easier.
Going back to what you said, Chris, right off the hop, I think that the Canucks do deserve full marks for handling the false positive in the way that they did. And I think that goes back to how the organization is being told to handle these cases, and probably to a larger degree how the NHL is telling clubs to handle these COVID cases. The club, for those who don't know, they shut down the facilities, they shut down practice, they investigated, they do contact tracing. And then only once those have all sort of been checked off the list is the team ready to return. I'm a little surprised that in a span of less than 24 hours, they were given the all clear to resume practice the next day. But that said, if it indeed is a false positive, then I think that the Canucks handled it very well. From an NHL perspective, I hope that those schedule makers have a lot of backup and contingency plans in place, because I think at the end of the day, we are going to see some sort of postponement of games, maybe even cancellation of games if things go really south. But I think the Canucks handled themselves really well, and for the most part, it was a wake-up call for them, as they said earlier today.
Mm-hmm. You know, on the note of scheduling, if cancellations do occur, Major League Soccer, as they sort of wrapped up their season, had to make the decision that there were teams that they just could not feasibly reschedule matches for. So they adjusted the rules that playoff teams were based on points percentage. Now, in the grand scheme of things, that's likely the most fair option. But when you consider how many professional teams operate, you're in it until you're not. And I'll use the Vancouver Whitecaps as an example. That decision meant they were out. Like, it wasn't like, oh, we got a shot. No, it's gone. Because these teams that are ahead of you, they're not going to ever play games or have an opportunity to lose. So there's a lot that rides on this. And if we think even beyond that, when it comes to the professional scope, there could be quite a bit of money involved, not so much within the teams themselves, but, you know, obviously other reasons why people might be putting money down on one thing or another. I'm just dancing around the topic. Let's talk a little bit about the roster as it looks to be shaping up for Wednesday. So I'm just going to quickly drop sort of friend of the show, Thomas Drantz. He had shared what he believed the roster would be. So I'm just going to rapid fire run through that. Up front, he has Miller, Pettersson, Besser, Pearson, Horvat, Roussel, Gaudette, Vertanen, Mott, Sutter, Beagle, McEwen. On the blue line, Hughes, Edler, Meyer, Schmidt, Ben, Chatfield, Yalevi, and in net, Holtby, Demko. How far off is Drancer on that list?
God, you went so fast that I need to make sure it was all ticked off. Yeah. You mentioned Hoglander is in there?
He did not have Hoglander in his opening roster.
Okay, I think Hoglander makes it. And I will say that I didn't expect that to happen previous to camp.
Well, and to jump around this, because while you're looking that up, Matt, one of the challenges that teams are now running into is the NHL has provided some clarity on how they view the roster that's being submitted Tuesday as being the one that then takes the ice on Wednesday. And so what some teams were going to do is they were going to, here's our roster on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, oh, by the way, this player is now on LTIR, something along those lines. NHL's like, no. If you're not doing this person on LTIR on Tuesday, and you're going to do it on Wednesday, we're just going to presume that was actually part of your Tuesday submission and you kind of forgot it. Why this plays into the Vancouver Canucks, but also other teams, LTIR is what you use to manage cap. And so what the teams were looking to possibly do is get themselves as close to the ceiling as possible before they were required to actually, you know, LTIR to get other players into the lineup, maximize value. So that could be why we're seeing maybe like a Hoglander who isn't there now could be there within a matter of time, because again, you gotta cook the books.
Definitely. Right. Do.
Yeah.
So Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that obviously that kind of threw a spanner in the works, the league's decision to stop the finagling. So yeah, it might affect it, especially when it comes to Hamannik, who's just started skating today, and inserting him into the roster. So that might have to wait. I do think that Chatfield is a Hamannik placeholder, but obviously that might have to wait until at least Thursday.
Right. I was going to say, Chris Gear earning every bit of his paycheck over the next 48 hours as he quote-unquote cooks the books on the cap. To your point, Chris, I'm checking out Thomas Drantz, friend of the show, in The Athletic. Check it out. His game day lineup for Wednesday does show Nils Höglander on Bo Horvat's line.
That's what I'm looking at now.
Okay. And then on that third line and fourth line, Roussel, Gaudette, Virtanen, as well as Mott, Beagle, and Sutter.
So then what I'm, because the tweet I was looking at was what he feels that the Vancouver Canucks were going to submit for their Tuesday lineup.
Right. I think they can be two different things. But I think when it's all said and done and the dust does settle and Wednesday night does come around, I think what we have discussed is we will see Nils Höglander in the opening night lineup, and we'll see Travis Hamannik in the opening night lineup, and we will see either Braden Holtby or Thatcher Demko between the pipes.
Yeah, do you have an answer on that?
As to who's going to be between the pipes?
Mm-hmm. I said this last week that I think Demko gets the first game, but Holtby gets the most starts of the season. So here's me hopping off of that fence.
Chris, what did you...
I have Holtby.
I mean, as far as camp goes... there isn't much of a difference. Holtby is maybe marginally outperforming Demko, considering he's had to adapt to a new goalie coach. But if I had to pick, I think I'd go with Matt and say that Demko is just the goalie in residence, considering there's not a big standout contender, that he might get the first shot. But we open with a back-to-back, so.
Well, and you know,
think we'll have both.
That's the key thing, is with the schedule as it is, there are a ton of back-to-backs, and there are back-to-back-to-back. So the likelihood of one, because I think it was in the last show I said, oh, I kind of see Holtby getting far more games. I am rethinking that because it's the struggle of remembering this season is unlike no other. It's no different than when we're starting to talk about point production or, you know, what we expect out of a player. One, it's not 82 games, so everything is going to be compressed. But then two, the fact that so many games are going to happen so quickly, it's going to be difficult to go and suggest, you know, Jake Virtanen is going to get X number of points like we had. So I would take back the whole Holtby gets more. I think it's more balanced, but I do think Holtby gets the start. But hey, you know, if Demko does, cool. I bet you, as Matt, you pointed out, it's one way or the other. Same goaltender's not starting both games.
Yeah, super quick off the rails, just in terms of the weird schedule. That's a consideration in fantasy too, right? Because draft ranking seems to overvalue older, more experienced players anyway, more than I would. But you've got to think in a season like this, then that those are the players that are really going to struggle.
Yeah, the wear and tear.
Mm-hmm.
All very, very good point.
Should we talk about the possible end of the Louis Erickson era in Vancouver? Has Louis Erickson, in your guys' mind, played his last game as a Canuck, or will the ghost of Louis Erickson rise once again?
I'm not willing to go and suggest he's played his last game as a Vancouver Canuck. Not yet. Like, if this was a regular season, if this was a full, normal 82 games, no craziness, I'd be more inclined to say he's probably done. They just bury him in Utica, peace be with Louis. This season, considering how much more difficult it will take, like, it's hard to suggest that you would be willing to give up the sort of stability that Louis brings. He doesn't bring much, but if there's one thing you could argue is that he doesn't hurt you as much as others could, especially in the clutch. So late season, Canucks in the in it. I could see them needing Louis if they had an injury or two.
Hannah?
I think honestly they'll leave him as a taxi squad member and use him in desperate times. I don't think he's someone that's immediately gonna jump in, but as Chris says, he's kind of a shoring up type of character. And he doesn't hurt the team that much. He hurts me, but
I mean I agree with both of you. I think Chris said it best that unfortunately Louis Eriksson, or maybe fortunately, Eriksson does bring something to the table that at least a NHL coach should revere, and that's the sense that he's not going to hurt you defensively. He's not going to give you much offensively either, but he's at least a warm body that can play 10 to 12 minutes a night and not cost you anything defensively. And that's probably the reason why we will see Louis Eriksson at some point. That and the condensed NHL schedule as well. The next question I wanted to ask you guys, hey, real quick, who plays more games for the Vancouver Canucks this season? Louis Eriksson, Justin Bailey, or Sven Berchi?
Yeah, the correct answer should be Sven Berchi.
Yeah.
But I don't, I think it's Bailey. Bailey, yeah. Eriksson, Berchi.
Who is the best player among those most NHL suitable? I think it's Sven Berchi, and it's not even close.
Is it Sven Berchi?
Yeah.
I think Berchi over Bailey.
Yeah.
I think Bailey over both of them.
I think Bailey has more potential than either one of them, but right now, Sven Berchi is a better player. And that's only going to decrease and decrease the more time he spends in Utica. But I think Chris is bang on that Berchi is at the bottom of the pile in terms of the coach's vision for the team.
I fully agree that I think Sven Berchi might be the better player right now. And I'm not going to take anything away from Sven Berchi because he actually had a pretty good training camp by all accounts. But I think Justin Bailey fits more into the bottom six or sparingly in the top six if it came down to it. I think Bailey has more of a utility feature about him than either of these players do. And I think that might be more of a reason why we see more games out of Justin Bailey this year than either Sven Berchi or Louis Eriksson. But yeah, it's funny that all three of us seem to be divided on who sees more games among those three.
Well, if there's one thing that we're, I think, agreed upon is Eriksson is not choice number one.
Yes, exactly right.
It should be noted, if for some reason our listeners weren't aware, Bailey, Berchi, Breezebaugh, Eriksson, Gravac, and Sontner were all designated for assignment, which means Utica or taxi squad. And then I believe there are some additional cuts today. Well, there would have to be. Let me see if I can find it. Jeff Patterson reporting that Lind, Wu, Lockwood, Gajewicz, Tevez, and is it Keeley or Kylie?
I think it's Jake Keeley.
I think it's Keeley.
Keeley, yeah. Okay. They've all been removed from the roster, so
we're getting that much closer.
What's taxi squad size?
I believe it's six.
I've not actually.
I was going to say six. So.
So if it's six, and then I think your roster, like your actual roster, game day roster is 21 max.
Yes. No, your game day roster is 20. Actually, if we're being
accurate. 20.
12, 6 and 2.
12, 6, 2. Okay.
Good math.
I'm just trying to, because that means there's still, like, there's two players that I know of. Like, there'll be Ferland on LTIR, and then there's one more player that will be on LTIR.
I should really look this up. Jace Haraluk.
Mm-hmm. That's it. So who else is, like, it's really odd that we've come down to this point, because that would mean there's, like, at least four players right now that are
on the
not good. Yeah, like, they're not taxi squad. They're not roster. So where are they?
In my mind, it's some combination of Jay Beagle, Zach McEwen, Travis Hamnick, Jordy Benn, and Olli Juolevi fighting for, I believe, two spots, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially with what Drance has suggested for the fourth line there. He seems to think that Sutter's playing on the wing, when Travis seemed to be pretty adamant that he likes Sutter at center. But yeah, it's Beagle can't really play on the wing, so if you're putting Sutter at center, Beagle sits.
But I mean, what we're talking about is simply dressing, not dressing, taxi squad. There's still a number of players who aren't in either. They are elsewhere. Like, that's the part that sort of has me a little confused. I presume there'll have to be some additional adjustments made, but there's a part of me that wonders, do the Vancouver Canucks have, like, does Jim currently have some magic being made as to some craziness to make the roster work, make the cap work, make.
I don't think so. To be honest, like 2 days out before the first game of the season, I think the roster is in the safe and capable hands of Chris Gear, and Jim Benning is simply telling him to crunch the numbers and make it work.
You're right, but then there's that part of me. There's craziness. The Vancouver Canucks aren't the only team in a tough spot. There are actually a number of teams right now needing to go and have their capologists essentially manufacture things. The NHL has come out in the 11th hour to say, oh yeah, that little quirk that y'all thought you were going to use, yeah, you're not using it, which is very unlike the NHL to go and do. Normally, they let teams abuse it once, and then they punish Vancouver for it. So, anyhow, who knows? I mean, we're recording Monday night. All the magic will happen tomorrow. Whatever it might be. You could be listening to this. The answer's already been held. But, we'll be talking about it in C4 Discord, which you can join by going to discord.io/C4podcast.
Very good.
Shameless plug.
I also think the interesting part of this is the goalie situation in terms of, who we're talking about for the, opening two nights. But it's what do they do with the taxi squad goalie?
I don't know. Clean the ice?
Yeah, but that's a hard thing, right? Like, Mikey DiPietro is obviously the next cab off the rank, but does he sit in the taxi squad and practice with the team, or they send him to Utica?
Yeah, I think DiPietro is best served going to Utica, where he will play real games. I would love for it to be a more proven solution than ECHL or Jake Healy, but it's not exactly an ideal spot for the Canucks.
NHL teams, I think, are required to have three goaltenders, are they not? Like, him going to, I don't, like, do they not need a goaltender on the, like?
Yeah, no, but Matt's suggesting Jake Healy would be our
taxi. Oh, Healy will be the, okay. See.
Then there's the other solution of potentially short-term loaning players to Canadian AHL teams.
Which is,
down the line.
But that play makes sense. But I would have thought we would have heard some form of like agreement in place already. You know what I mean? Like how Vancouver and who is it? St. Louis was it?
St. Louis, yeah. Bought our team off in the first place.
Yeah, but no, that makes sense. Yeah, you're right. Development-wise, how do you have Jakey clean the ice? Like, or DiPietro, sorry. When I say Jake, DiPietro. I don't know. I give up. I'm just going to watch games. Players scored. Yeah. Players didn't score. Goaltenders let goals in.
As for agreements for the short-term loan thing, I think we'll just see it as and when it happens. I think it will be a... hey, like, can we send Mikey to you for three games to tune him up?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it will be a pragmatic thing, responding to injuries and or scheduling crunches.
True that. Anyway, more will be foretold over the course of the week as the NHL season starts. We'll take ourselves a quick break here. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
He liked to say the F word. Well, then get the f*** here, then. Okay, see ya.
Is going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a explanation about it. I can't.
You out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
What storyline, when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks, are you most interested in this season? I mean, there's quite a few that we could sort of look at even before the season has started. Travis Green, for instance, he's currently a lame duck coach, which is odd. Again, weird season, wacky world. But by all accounts, he's done a relatively decent job in Vancouver. You can't really argue that the team's not been developing. It's not been growing. Maybe one might argue it was improving at a rate that was maybe ahead of schedule up till sort of last year, and then quirkiness happened. But is it not odd that even in a weird year that the team would want to leave him sort of twisting in the wind?
It's weird. We've already seen externally about how many media experts have sort of talked about the value of Travis Green as a head coach. And if the Vancouver Canucks somehow were to let him get out on the open market, he would have a line of suitors who would be wanting his services. So that right there should indicate that the Canucks should probably put pen to paper sooner rather than later on an extension. I'm surprised it hasn't. I don't know what's the backroom dealings on why it hasn't, but hopefully it gets resolved in the first month or two of the season, because quite honestly, that's the kind of thing that becomes a distraction.
Yeah, I'm with Matt on that. I think Canucks just may as well have been called the team of missed opportunities this offseason. Just what an opportunity to capitalize on great PR of going as far as we did in the postseason. And there's just a few players that we could have maybe kept around for a small chunk of money. So yeah, it does seem strange that they didn't use that opportunity to sort of say, like, Travis is our guy, we're only going to build on this. Because who knows if we will. Like, this is such a strange season. You've got to say the team has gotten a little weaker. So it just seems strange that they didn't, like, use that positive moment to re-sign.
Yeah. A friend of mine has suggested that it has more to do with Jim Benning than it does with Travis Green. And that's not to say Benning doesn't want Green back. That is more ownership saying to Benning, hey, was last year a mirage? Or is that actually a sign of things to come? And that potentially, if, let's say, the Vancouver Canucks regress and regress significantly, even in the wacky season that we would see, ownership would simply say, you know what? Reset. Bring in new GM, who in turn brings in new coach. We have to consider, you look back at the Vancouver Canucks, when Mike Gillis came on board, the world was shocked that AV stuck around. Like, even AV, I think, presumed he was going to have to find a new team. They kept him. Now, Mike Gillis only ever got one additional coach to take. Jim Benning, however, he's had a couple himself. So I don't entirely know if they'd let him bring back a third one. And then the other thing, though, I countered with is like, okay, if this makes a lot of sense, great. But the Canucks don't really know organizationally how much money they've got to spend. Like, one might argue that they're a little cash poor. We've seen a lot of the deals they've signed where they're allocating dollars outside of this weird season. We've got expansion, obviously, coming into play, which is going to adjust rosters across the league. So could it be that the Vancouver Canucks are just being prudent?
I don't know. That I get that reasoning, but I'm not sure if that's as important.
I'm genuinely curious. How many teams, like, and you don't have to say seven, but, you know, like, will it, like, Matt, you had mentioned that the word on the street is Travis Green, if he makes it to coach free agency, as if there is a thing, there would be people picking up the phone and giving him a call. Do you think there's actually a market for Travis? And the thing about that also is, does Travis want to go to those teams? Like, if he has a choice of playing the market or potentially coming back to Vancouver. I would imagine if another team were to make an offer, they would have to be where Vancouver is development-wise, or a contender that doesn't look like they're going to see the door slam shut.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, Travis Green has made every indication he'd like to be back in Vancouver for the long term and how he's excited about the team's future. But that said, he's going to have options too. Teams will mm-hmm. want to have him. And, you know, I know coaching vacancies don't exactly open up for long periods of time either for him. But whether it be him biding his time over an offseason, he's going to have teams who would be very interested in his services. And I think this is someone who we're going to see this year get some serious consideration for Jack Adams, to be honest with you. Travis Green is valued very highly across the league. And even though he has said he wants to be in Vancouver and maybe loses a bit of negotiation leverage that way, this is somebody who's going to have options for him if he's out there in the open market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think he wants to go where he's wanted. And he wants to go somewhere where, you know, his opinion matters in the development of the team. And I think that is Vancouver, but obviously Jim Benning isn't the perfect GM to work with. Though I'm sure there are worse out there as well. So yeah, I think it is important to lock him down because as much as he's attached to the development of these players that he's seen through Utica and Vancouver, it'll be much more important to him to be valued.
Yeah. So I sort of suggested the possibility of a Canucks performance issue, but looking at this roster, looking at the start of this season, looking at the fact that the Vancouver Canucks are going to only play the Canadian teams, where do we sort of see the team trending? Are we trending towards a more progressive experience? Progression not necessarily meaning... Actually, what is progression? Is progression making the playoffs? Is progression competing for a playoff spot? Or is progression sort of the big picture? Players performed, they just happened to run into... you know, the impediment that is the 2021 season?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. What is considered progression for this year's version of the Vancouver Canucks? And even though it would technically be considered a step back, I think given a weird condensed season like 2021, progression for me is the Vancouver Canucks getting back into the postseason. They don't necessarily have to win a round, but I think progression mm-hmm. means them getting into the postseason once again and maybe making a little bit of noise. I think we can all agree that this is a weird, weird year for every single NHL team that's playing. And that the Vancouver Canucks, you know, there was a lot of roster turnover. And I think there are probably more people than not who think that they're a candidate to regress. So for me, I look at progression as them getting back into the playoffs.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair standard to have. Given, obviously, Canucks outperformed expectations under strange bubble circumstances, whatever. But although there are some losses to our team, there's a lot of new faces. Goaltending is up in the air. I do think that should be a standard that the Canucks are now at, that they're at making the postseason, and that should be an expectation.
My question to you guys, do you think that the Canucks are a better or worse team than last year, though? Because I look at the additions of Nate Schmidt and Travis Hamonic replacing Tanev and Stetcher. Yeah, the Canucks are dropping off from Jacob Markstrom to a combination of Holtby and Demko. But all things considered, I think that the club is kind of the same.
Okay, so that's what I was going to say. Like, if you were going to say better, I'm like, no, I don't know if they're better, but I could argue that they're, you know, the addition and subtraction have net to zero.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the top six is maybe where you'd say slight regression in that Höglander, as promising as he's looked in camp, is such an unknown quantity. But yeah, overall, I think the defense is... after looking a lot worse, is actually looking better. And goaltending, who's to say? I think definitely more uncertain, but overall the needle hasn't moved that much in terms of roster, but that's just so much.
I will say, different. I think Anna brings up a good point about Nils Höglander, and for me, I look at Höglander as that that sort of make or break factor on whether or not the team is better or not. I think that's the biggest drop-off is you're going from a proven top six talent in Tyler Toffoli to a complete unknown in Nils Höglander, but has demonstrated all the skills that he belongs in the NHL. So if Nils Höglander can at least fill some of that void that Tyler Toffoli has left behind, I would actually be willing to venture that the Vancouver Canucks are a better overall team than they were last season. Are they better enough that they're going to book their seat into the conference finals? Probably not. But again, we're looking at progression as the Vancouver Canucks getting back to the postseason.
Agree with me.
Well, no,
I agree. I will agree. I was going to say Höglander is that variable. But yeah. Now I'm starting to think, are we putting faith into a variable that at worst is simply status quo? Or, like, let's be honest, as Canucks fans, we tend to significantly overvalue our prospects, and then they hit the ice, and then we go and we tear them apart if they don't. Or in some cases, we will support them until the day we die, even though their potential will never be met. Like, we sort of do this. So I'm kind of wondering with Höglander, like, are we maybe overvaluing him based on what we saw of him prior to coming to camp, what we saw from him in camp, and will that hold true into the NHL season? Obviously, I'm not saying we can answer that, but you know what I mean? Like, are we seeing this through our Canucks tinted glasses?
It's not unfair to say that Canucks fans overvalue prospects sometimes, but I also think that goes hand in hand with Canucks fans knowing their prospects more than a lot of fan bases do.
Sure.
And that's probably because of that period of retooling that they went through.
There was a statistic that showed the Vancouver Canucks were actually at Canucks was mentioned in the NHL offseason and trending up. So the fact that Canucks fans were causing the Canucks to trend in the offseason.
There is no offseason for Canucks Twitter, Chris. You know this.
I know. No, Matt, I'm gonna simplify. I agree with you. I actually agree with you. Let's take ourselves another short break here. You are listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
As we look to, wrap up this episode, because we got that fantasy draft that the two of you have to go and, like, you know, perform well in. I'm not, because auto draft isn't all that flashy. But let's talk a little bit about what we saw out of the preseason. So, for instance, I'm going to kick this one off talking about a little dust up that occurred. Adam Gaudette and Tadamot, they exchanged some pleasantries. One might argue that Mott came in with what could be argued was a slew foot. Obviously, players are coming into the preseason to compete because they're not getting that opportunity to sort of do it in game shape against the opposition. What does it mean that Mott's – do you even say he's playing his team hard? Because wasn't it he had – leading up to that, I want to say he had taken a shot at someone else. And then Gaudette finally just had enough with it and said, let's go.
Yeah, I think Mott was the one that was in on the play that may have injured Jace Hauerluck. So there was a little bit of blood boiling over, I guess, in that instance. I don't think that the two incidents are directly correlated with each other. But At the end of the day, it looks like Adam Gaudette, at least on the surface, was not very pleased about that quote-unquote takedown from Tyler Mott. My thoughts, it's two guys that are getting, enjoying the intensity of a scrimmage. Travis Green put it best when he said he didn't love it and he didn't hate it either. I think that there's nothing wrong with bringing a little bit of intensity to bring that NHL kind of feel to your practices, but you don't want your teammates fighting each other either.
Well, no, that's the hate it part. Because what bad could happen from that, right? There's so much. But then equally, you want to see the fight, the fight, the passion, the compete, because that's something you use to evaluate when you see like the Canucks play the Flames, you know, in a split squad or what have you, as you sort of go through the preseason.
Yeah, I think fighting camp is dumb, but boys with their testosterone do dumb things sometimes.
Sometimes?
Yeah, exactly. But yes, I do think it's obvious Tyler Mott is on the bottom end of the roster. Like, he's going to have a competitive camp. Adam Gaudette's trying to cement that third line spot. Jake Virtanen, I know, like, piled River Puck into Jack Rathbone as well. So they're, you know, living on the edge through camp. So not too big of a deal.
In a sensitive spot of Jack Rathbone.
Yeah, I said knees, but, you know, lower body.
He hit him in the left Rath, or was it the right bone?
Oh. It might have been both. Right in the jack.
God.
Speaking of Adam Gaudette, though, just on that note, apparently he has been having some nutrition issues and spoke to a nutritionist and has now been able to get things sorted out to put some weight on. And I'll be honest, I wasn't aware that weight was ever an issue with Gaudette. So if this obviously helps him become healthy, doesn't matter what his weight needs to be. But what does this potentially mean for his game, like being sort of that heavier player on the ice? Are we going to see him become that sort of true agitator that there are some who would love to see him be and slash, you know, power forward?
Well, I mean, first of all, I cannot imagine not being able to eat a full meal like Adam Gaudette had been for the last few years. That sounded terrible. Because when I'm eating something, I'm going to eat the whole thing. And so good to hear that he's able to eat full meals again. In terms of him becoming the power forward, I hope so. It sounds like he had trouble putting on weight as a result of this condition. And, you know, I think everyone's sort of hoping for a little bit more out of Adam Gaudette as we go into like year three, I believe, of his NHL season, of its NHL career. And that's typically when you start to see players scratch the surface of their potential. So it's definitely coming at a good time for him in his development.
Yeah, and I think just from a mindset point of view, it seems like something that was really bugging him. So if he's more comfortable in himself, less stressed, that's really going to help in this condensed season.
How many of the players are going to be Twitch streamers by the end of the season, out of curiosity?
I was watching some of those streams, and to be honest, I was mildly entertained from them, too.
I will say that the anti-Fortnite take has aged badly.
Well, okay, look at the roster composition when that occurred to how it exists today. It has, the age has dropped quite a bit, and you now have the likes of, I'll use Adam Gaudette as an example. Adam Gaudette and his wife Michaela have seen the power that is social media. I've been in a few of his streams. It is one of the most accessible ways to get to a player imaginable. Now, there's a double-edged sword there, being as accessible as it is, equally as easy for you to drop some crap in a stream. But I talk about the good old days, and I know, you know, it's dating myself as I am apt to do. You used to be able to go to Vancouver Canucks games, and at the end of the game, didn't matter what seat you paid for or who you were, you could head down the stairs from the concourse into the lower bowl, hang out at a gate that was within shouting distance of players. And many of them would come up, they'd chat, they'd sign things. Like, the accessibility existed. And that went away as obviously the modern rinks were built. It then became monetized. You know, I know season ticket holders get opportunities, other people get opportunities. And then even with social media, you know, accessibility to the person like you and I to players didn't exist, but now like gaming, Twitch streaming, what have you, it just allows them to introduce themselves to their fans in a whole different way. And I think that understanding now exists. It's the era of the players who are like, you know, completely arm's length, stay away from me, is necessarily going away. And now we're seeing more like Petey. How many times has Petey engaged with people on Twitter? He might not actually reply, but you'll say, hey, Petey, can you do this? And suddenly he's doing, you know, Instagram modeling and whatnot based on your suggestion.
Yeah, it was definitely the summer of Petey. He had himself a great time, and you know what? He's having fun. There's so much about hockey that is stuck up and stuck in its ways. So it's really great to see some of the young players driving that change and kind of forcing the sport into the modern era.
Mod Girl Summer. I mean, shout out to the broadcast, but they made that a successful charity campaign that even Tyler Mott and many of the players on the Vancouver Canucks got behind. You know, I it's more than gaming, but I think gaming is sort of a sign of change starting to occur. It's just unfortunate it has taken as long as it has for this cultural shift to occur in the game. Back on the Canadian division. I want to do a quick way too early, but why not ranking of those Canadian teams?
Ooh. I want to do this game.
I figured you would, Matt.
Toronto is a clear number one, unfortunately. And Ottawa is a clear number seven, unfortunately. Or fortunately. And then after that is where it gets interesting. My early thoughts are it's going to be Calgary, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Montreal, and I think that's everybody.
Edmonton? Why did you have Edmonton?
Oh, yeah. I always try to forget about Edmonton. Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal in 2-6.
So Toronto 1, Ottawa 7. I will agree with you there. I was actually going to say, is it easier to go from the bottom up or from the top down? Because the middle is where the problems exist.
Look, the cream is the best part of the Oreo.
So who, I can't remember who it was on Twitter, had done the analysis, like essentially taken a prediction and had the Vancouver Canucks being outside looking in, having them at sort of ceiling was 4, probably 5, outside looking in 6. My difficulty is not knowing how Edmonton's going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
I feel Edmonton is just a team that exists in the world of question marks.
Yeah. See, my problem with Edmonton and Winnipeg, for example, is that Winnipeg has some really good players, but they never seem to be able to put it together in a row. Whereas Edmonton does not have a ton of good players, but they have a couple of elite players, and that seems to be enough for them to sort of skate around in the mediocre level when really they're a terribly built team. You've got to think that their goaltender situation will come to roost.
Yeah, my problem with Edmonton is their goalie is sus, as they say in Among Us.
Well, they're running back. Goaltending is the problem. What do we need? Let's just run it back. It'll work this time.
Mm-hmm.
So Edmonton, like, if things actually pan out, you've got the McDavid and Drysdale carry factor as well. Like, that's what's scary about Edmonton is if they can figure out how to prevent the goals from being scored, they have shown that they can score themselves. Calgary, I feel, is made improvements. I see them being a very competitive team. I could see it Toronto, Calgary. Montreal, I feel, is aging.
Montreal's got some young up-and-coming players as well, though.
But I feel like
Montreal's in the middle ground.
Yeah, like Montreal, I feel sort of where Vancouver was sort of in the tail end of the Sedin era, where there's a window, but is it open or is it closing or is it closed? I think Winnipeg is just too vanilla to not miss the playoffs. Like, they, to me, they're gosh. See, that's the problem. Like, okay, I'm going to say Ottawa, Edmonton down at the bottom, Toronto, Calgary up top, and then it's a sword fight between the Jets, the Habs, and the Canucks.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I will say very quickly before we go, NHL.com released a lot of their expert predictions for the season, and the Vancouver Canucks were in an awful lot of conference final and even Stanley Cup final lists.
Wow.
An awful lot.
That just from, like, just from the bubble? Like, they,
I don't know. I think people are seeing the star power in Vancouver and definitely gravitating towards Vancouver. Vancouver is now the sexy team in the NHL.
Okay. Hmm. But Eric Gabrunson doesn't play for us anymore.
Interesting. All right.
No, I'm genuinely shocked. If there are a number of people that have them in Stanley Cup final, like conference final, like in my mind, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Like that would be like, oh my goodness, this is like better than 2011 game 7 where they win almost. Oh, no, it wouldn't have been better than that. Yeah. Anyway, listeners, genuinely curious, where do you have the Canadian division all panning out? Obviously, it is difficult to tell, and where we are watching these teams play over and over and over with rosters that we're not entirely sure will be comprised of, in a schedule that may or may not change as the season goes on. Fantasy sports be damned. Good thing we're running a pool ourselves. Any other final tidbits or notes we want to touch on before we look to wrap this show up?
Well,
I noticed in the rundown.
Sorry?
I was going to say, I noticed in the rundown you had likelier Pettersson gets Hart consideration or Hughes gets Norris consideration.
Real quick, I think Hughes gets Norris consideration.
Over Pettersson getting in Hart?
I like them both, though.
Can I?
Right?
All I'm going to say is Hart is stupid, and I'm not going near Hart. It's such a stupid award. So I will say Hughes marginally. But,
okay, I don't disagree about Hart, but like friend of the show, Jordan Maitman, had pointed out that the Eastern Canadian media are now going to be forced to watch Petey because the Canucks are going to be playing those teams far more than they normally do. And that might open their eyes that, you know, he's more than a defensive liability who's just flashy in the postseason.
Yeah. And my last real thought is free Vasily Podkolzin. Free him.
Oh, gosh. Do you think he'll ever play in the KHL again?
Oh, no. Just get out of there. Get out of Russia.
If you're like, I understand the lure if you feel that your career is coming to a close and you need to continue to play. But I just, even a homegrown player, outside of being sort of forced to, you run the risk.
Isn't he? That's as good as.
Yeah, I just.
April 30th can't come soon enough.
The way he's been deployed, the way he's been treated, the fact he gets dressed and skates for less than a minute.
Yep.
Yeah, imagine if your like entire like shift at work was a minute long.
Jake Virtanen in Travis Green's doghouse gets more ice time than Podkolzin often has. And I didn't know that was even possible. So here we are, wrapping up another phenomenal show, back, as we said, weekly. Before I forget, for those of you who are patrons who have helped us out by choosing to listen in, look for an episode of Off the Rails to come to you later this week. And that will resume on a twice monthly basis. I'd say bi-weekly, but I did that once and someone's like, twice a week? Twice monthly. Makes better sense. Mm-hmm. I think we need to do a best of show. Sounds good. But what final words of wisdom do you have all of our listeners there?
Free Vasily Podkolzin. And I'm getting ready to make my draft selection.
Deja vu. Anna?
Hashtag beat Edmonton.
Oh. Maybe I'm more of the pessimist. Hashtag don't lose to Edmonton. It's half empty, half full, same amount of water.
I was going to say, is that not the same thing? There are no draws in hockey.
It is. It is the same thing. However, it's, are you going to go into the game to win, or are you going to go into the game to not lose?
Don't be that guy, Chris.
I am always that guy. If you haven't done so already, join C4 Discord Gate 16. It's hopping. Lots of conversation, some hot takes, some cold takes, and a whole lot of, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, awesome, awesome, awesome. Discord.io/C4podcast is the place to go. If you're not already following us on Twitter at the C4 Podcast, click that subscribe button on our C4 YouTube channel. It's bit.ly/104C4. So 100 F-O-R, all caps C, capital C4. That'll get you there. We're 36, I want to say, when I last checked, to our goal of 100. So help us out by clicking the subscribe. And something I haven't actually asked for anyone to do in a long time, but please do that. Drop us a review. Love us, hate us, as long as it's 5 stars, we're happy. But you can review us on Apple Podcasts. I want to say Stitcher might be another one that allows for it. And if you're like, well, I want to leave a review, but the app that I use doesn't allow for it, go to podchaser.com, search for the C4 Podcast. podchaser.com/C4Podcast is the way to go. You can not only review the show, you can review individual episodes there. So if there's an episode we did well, let us know. And if there was an episode we didn't do so hot, let us know that we did well to sort of pump our tires a bit. We need it. So on behalf of the designated for assignment, Adam Omnalkar, Adam FOC, Matt Lee @Matt_Lee_61, Anna Forsyth @E4403, myself, Chris Lightforce, signing off with those words of, we're out.